Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Directions for Truth show with Richard Talk to Me Guy. And Sherry Edwards is in the lab cranking out software. The code monkey is what we would call it in the tech world. So today we're going to be doing a show with Mona Lisa Schultz talking about her newest book, Heal Your Mind, Your Prescription for Wholeness Through Medical Medicine, Affirmations and Intuition. Dr. Mona Lisa, as you'll hear in the interview, was somebody I'd interviewed back in the 90s, I believe, originally, and was one of the early of the medical intuitives, MD, you know, multiple degrees, unbelievably studied, possessed, and brilliant. But first, before we get to that, I just want to remind everybody, because there's so much talked about in this show, I bet you're going to want to listen to the replay. And an easy way to do that is either if you're an iTunes user to go to iTunes and go into podcasts and search for Sherry Edwards there, and you'll see some of the 480 shows we have. I think are listed there, and this will be in the newest one. If you're not an iTunes user, then you can also go directly to Sound Health Options, click on the radio tab, and then click on Blog Talk Radio, and down there on the page is the player for Blog Talk Radio, and it shows the last five shows. And or, if you want a different kind of app, my preferences are Stitcher or Pocket Casts, which are both cross-platform. And those are really nice because you can set up other shows you want to listen to, and also set up so that you can search for anything by Sherry Edwards. And the shows will show up there, and you can listen to them as you desire. If you have any questions in chat, I will be here. And here we go with Dr. Mona Lisa Schultz. Mona Lisa Schultz is a medical intuitive. Dr. Schultz received her doctorates, an MD and a PhD, behavioral neuroscience, from Boston University School of Medicine in 1983. In addition to her extensive background in health and brain research, Dr. Schultz has been a practicing medical intuitive since 1987. During a medical intuitive consultation, knowing only someone's name and age, Dr. Mona Lisa discerns both a person's physical condition and the emotional state of his or her life, and explaining how the two are linked. Dr. Schultz teaches us how to become aware of how our symptoms of illness are part of our intuition network, letting us know when something in our lives is out of balance. During a medical intuitive consultation, there is no physician-patient relationship, nor is any psychotherapy being performed. Mona Lisa will educate you in how specific emotional situations in your life are associated with increased risk of illness in a specific organ in your body. One of the many joys in Dr. Mona Lisa's life is teaching individuals how to acknowledge, trust, and develop their intuitive skills. Dr. Mona Lisa joins us to talk with us about her life and her new book, Heal Your Mind, Your Prescription for Wholeness Through Medicine, Affirmations, and Intuition.
Dr. Mona Lisa, I have to ask you, because it's just such an amazing journey, with doctorates as an MD and then a PhD, and in by now more than 20 years of education, what was your journey to have you practice as a medical intuitive and then add, what I would say add, in the Louise Hay factor? How did you get there?
Well, when I was seven, I wanted to know how things work. And since I remember watching the Olympics, I remember watching, you know, these Romanian and Russian gymnasts, and I remember crying. And my parents asked why I was crying, and I said that I could never be the best at anything. So from that moment on, I decided that I would study, 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 and that I wanted to be a physician and scientist. That was age 7. And then at age 4, I don't know many people who do this, I prayed to God to make me smart. Because up to that point, I was average. Basic
wow.
B student. And mm-hmm. though, and when I was 7, I got F conduct grades in school, which pretty much describes the intuition thing. My teacher said, I think this is the ADD connection with intuition. She said that I finished my work quick and impulsively, but I was overly interested in the problems of people in the back of the room. And so my whole life, I have been interested in the problems of people in the back of the room. And even though with intuition, we work on our work on Earth, we are always in our mind focused on empathically connected to people's problems that cause a kind of ethereal distractibility. And so at the age of 12, I developed my spine curved 120 degrees, and I was in the hospital for a year, and then I started to develop an epilepsy, a sleep disorder, where I'd fall asleep while I was walking. And basically, I think having prayed to the heavens to make me smart, it also changed my body and brain to facilitate intuition so that I was at total intelligence. And having gotten through high school with straight A's, I started to develop worse health problems at Brown. And then the way to access my intelligence couldn't just be through my left brain intellect. Actually, I'm dyslexic. That's left brain. I had to figure out how to use the awareness that was preserved while I was asleep. I had to figure out what was going on when I was lights were out. And so I'd go through to Kudim Data healer after healer, and they said that I had this ability that my brain would freeze and thaw, that I could see into the problems of people's life in the back of the room. And then when I learned to use it, my health would get better. I said, how long is that going to take? They said, 13 years. It took me 6 years to graduate from Brown, of which I worked my way through. I did an MD and a PhD. I worked in labs. And basically, my body started falling apart only when I wanted just a pure left brain career. Then, after my spine fell apart, I finished psychiatry and I started working on a friend's book, Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. And I only did medical intuition, something I learned how to do to get out of the hospital faster. I used it. Somebody heard I was doing it, and they gave me a book contract. So I wrote a book, did medical intuition at night to pay back my student loans, and was a psych resident. And so it was nothing that I really wanted to do full time. I always just wanted to be an academic MD, PhD physician. But as the universe would have it, you know, things are not the way we expect. So I have two careers. I keep them separate. I have my left brain physician and my right brain medical intuition, and I keep them separate. And it pretty much is the way my brain and body are constructed. That is how I became the way I am.
Wow. So you really trained yourself to separate your intuition, your right brain, from your left brain?
No, I didn't train myself. When I was a medical student at Boston City Hospital, I just finished my PhD in neuroanatomy. I was really scared. I didn't remember much about physical diagnosis and stuff. So it was an inner city hospital, where every major city has one, where you're overwhelmed, you don't have enough money, you don't have enough resources. They don't give you an orderly to drag patients around, so the medical student has to do everything. It's like a MASH unit. So they give you the name and the age of the patient, and they say, pick her up. That's it. They don't tell you anything. And so all of us every day, whether you're a radio announcer, a mother, a father, a nurse, maybe a politician, I doubt it, you get left brain intellect, but you don't get the complete story. So your right brain helps you make correct decisions with insufficient information. And I didn't have sufficient information. All I had was someone's name and age. So I get it in the elevator gets stuck. And I get this lady's name, Mary Brown, 48. And I have my clipboard. And in my white coat, short white coats of medical students, I look up and I see this lady with these stretch pants on, lime green, and she's screaming, clutching the right part of her abdomen, screaming, "Doctor, doctor, it's my gallbladder." So being stuck in the elevator in between floors, I thought, how would I evaluate someone who had a gallbladder problem? So I got the clipboard. I got a scut sheet. That's what you call it. You say it's doing scut. You work people up. And I drew diagrams based on those little books of how I would evaluate someone. I ran myself the exercise of how I would evaluate someone who had a gallbladder problem. So I wrote a little box, you know, check the right upper quadrant near the liver and gallbladder. I would have to check their eyes to see if they had jaundice. I would have to drag them down to radiology to do an ultrasound of the gallbladder and so on. And by the time I had done that little run-through of a hypothetical patient, I go down to the ER, I pull the curtain open, because they have, you know, they click cubicles in the ER, and lo and behold, there is a lady lying on the gurney with lime-green stretch pants, screaming, "Doctor, doctor, it's my gallbladder." I'm like, son of a bitch. That's amazing. And so I pull the card, the scut sheet, out of my pocket, and I just worked her up. Where most people are lost in the weeds of all these left brain details and intellect, I had worked it up. So I quickly dragged her to radiology, did the ultrasound, threw the correct labs, did a focused physical exam, and got out of the hospital at 4 p.m. when everybody else was stuck there until 8 p.m. because they were lost in the confusion of details. And I did that 3 days in a row. They would give me the name and the age of someone, and I'd get a picture clairvoyantly in my mind, and I would work them up. And the third person, I remember doing it, and people were saying, "How do you get out of here at 4 in the afternoon?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And it would give me time to go home and read up about the diseases that my patients had. After the third patient, I didn't realize what I was doing. I didn't realize it was a medical intuitive reading. I just thought it was this trick that I did to get out of the hospital faster. By the third time I did it, I remember where I was. I was in this conference room, and we were going over our patients, and the last one was like, I can't remember what was wrong with her. The second one was a bladder infection. I don't remember the third one. But when it matched what I saw ahead of time, I went, son of a bitch, out loud in front of all these people. And they looked at me and they went, excuse me. I went, oh, I'm so sorry. I think it's my Tourette syndrome or something. And they laughed. The point of the matter is, I realized that nurses did it. Nurses would know ahead of time when someone was going to code. And that every paraprofessional and professional, there was always someone. They usually had a weight problem or were irritable or something was unique about them, their brain and body, that gave them this exaggerated sense of keying into what you couldn't see. And it made them a better professional. And so it wasn't a choice. It was something that was a unique byproduct of probably my unique brain epilepsy and my unique body. That's how it happened.
Wow. And the trick in my mind, which is a whole show by itself, is that for me, is that you engaged it. You know, that's to me the miracle part, is that you actually engage that part of yourself.
It's not a miracle. It was desperation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's a phrase, necessity is the mother of invention.
Right, okay.
Necessity. People who don't have a necessity, I find it a handicap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, you know, that's so great for her. No, I was desperate. D-E-S-P-E-R-A-T-E, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, desperate.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
There was no, oh, you know, I think that people spend millions of dollars each year in classes to learn intuition when their body's screaming at them in the midst of a divorce, screaming at them when they're in a bad relationship, screaming at them when they're in the wrong job, screaming on them, et cetera, that something in their life needs to be attended to. Necessity is the mother of invention. Every day, your body is instructing you intuitively through dreams, through images, through feelings, sights, and sounds, that you can learn that language out of necessity. The trick is to respond to it, you know, to respond to it and not think you're an idiot. I think maybe I'm too stupid to not respond. Impulsivity in ADHD helps because most people with a big frontal lobe can filter it away and go, oh, that's ridiculous, I won't do that. Someone with ADHD, you know, is impulsive and distractible and can't not respond to those images. A perimenopausal or peritestopausal man is losing hormones, and so their access to that frontal lobe filter makes it hard for them to not to distract themselves from that image that their child is ill or their spouse, their husband or wife is late and why, or are they ill or something. They can't not attend to that intuitive warning sign. And so it's not the trick of learning how to do it. It's the trick of not being distracted by it. You have to be able to allow yourself to get pulled into the vortex of it.
I've often said that you have to be thin-skinned enough to pick everything up, but thick-skinned enough to stand and to understand and to accept what you're picking up. Because sometimes it's not very nice about you. And I'm talking myself. We had some guy who came up to me and his first thought was, you're too ugly to be on stage. And he looked like a troll. He was bald-headed on top and long stringy hair. But I couldn't tell the difference between what he said and what he thought. And I said, well, what do you think I could do about being so ugly? And he said, well, nothing, you look like my mother, and I hate her too.
Well, I would say, you know, have you told that to Barbra Streisand recently? Would you say that to Jimmy Durante? There are a variety of people who have made a, you know, the Rhode Island Northeast comedic snappy answer has its use. If you have low self-esteem, which we all do, of course, why doesn't he? There is also the sarcastic, flippant answer back, which really helps. Someone who has an arrogant, I mean, I've never thought that I was smart enough. I've never thought that I was thin enough. I've never thought, nor ever will think I'm smart enough, thin enough, or successful enough, ever. These are thought patterns that we all have indelibly graved in our brain and our body. There's a great book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. So he thinks that way. So you have to, that may be your emotion in your right brain. This is dialectical behavioral therapy, a kind of cognitive behavioral therapy that's very similar to Louise Hayes' affirmations. You can do hers free with a book, or you can do dialectic behavioral therapy and pay a copay. But nonetheless, having that kind of quick-footed, there's a great book by great song by Cole Porter, You're the Top. And if you listen to the lyrics of Cole Porter, You're the Top, every single one of the things that's superlative, that's the best, is flawed. Like the Tower of Pisa is crooked. The smile on the Mona Lisa, she didn't have one. The nose of Jeremy Durante is bulbous. I actually think the guy has some kind of blood disorder or a skin disorder. So my point is, so maybe you're not, you know, Sophia Loren. So Phyllis Diller didn't do so bad. And these are to Barbra Streisand. And by the way, Barbra Streisand ain't going to fix her nose, because if she fixes her nose, she won't have her voice.
Very true. When
so
I talk,
the thing is that when someone tells you that, you just give them a snappy answer back, because basically,
I knew it was his problem, not mine.
I know, but it's not about the problem. It's about the fact that it may be a fact. You may not be attractive, the first part, but it has nothing to do with TV. That's the problem with those statements. They hook us because part of them is true. The other part is bullshit.
I gave you that because it was a difference of me not knowing if he thought it or if he said it. And I taught her.
The thing is that you're reading his mind about where it comes from. That's correct. That makes complete sense. The problem is it still hooks you because you know you don't have that kind of beauty.
It didn't help me. It was his problem, and I handed it back to him. But I was trying to make the point that I taught parapsychology for over 10 years at the university. And most of the time, the way to bring somebody's intuition or up high is to show them how to get out of their own way and to not take people's sayings or thoughts like that seriously. That's all I was trying to say.
The reason why I say that, that's fabulous. If you know those bastards that you just talked about, that guy,
mm-hmm.
those predators, those sociopaths are very intuitive, which confounds what we know about intuition because we think it has to do just with empathy. And theory is that sociopaths don't have empathy. Thereby, you think they don't have intuition. But somehow they do. They know unwittingly someone's weak spot. And they go right for it, the bastard.
How do you think people pick up things from each other? Or is it just something that we had and we've started to hide as we became more socialized?
Well, let me give you an example vis-a-vis your story, okay? Because I think he's an angel for you. Because I think he'll fit. So the universe, God, or whatever you believe in, is up there, okay? He says, so God is a clipboard, okay? Whatever you believe, universe, whatever. And he says, we got a Sherry Rogers here. And the angels start getting nervous. All right? He teaches parapsychology at this university, and that's great. But we got her down to do this work in a more global thing and visual. And the angels start getting nervous, and they beat their wings, you know, as angels tend to do. Oh, I don't know. She's got a little insecurity about her appearance. And God, the universe, or whatever you believe in, says, God damn it. And the angels go, you know, you can't say that. Kristen South, I don't give up. The angels go, you can't say that either. He says, I know what we're going to do. We're going to send a basic bastard in there to say something awful to her so that she will push forward beyond it. But we'll also prove that she has this ability because she'll be able to read his thoughts and know it's his garbage. So God looks at the angels and goes, go, what are you waiting for? So the angels leave. Find this bastard and send him to you. Because I was sent someone just like that. I called Reed Tracy at Hay House, and I said, I want to do a radio show. And Reed says, okay, you need a radio agent. So I got one. I got this interview with this radio agent. You know what the guy said? Guy said to me, you don't have a voice for radio. You don't have a personality for radio. You're never, ever going to have a radio show. Are you following me?
Wow.
I was stricken. I was upset. And I might add to you, the same thing happened to Katie Couric. She did something on CNN, and the head of CNN, the president or whatever, the owner, was in the room and said, get her off the camera. That woman will never, ever be in front of a camera. And then, of course, she was on NBC for years, the moron. So my point is frequently, it's not just what you read in that person's mind because, you know, whatever past lives they had or this life or whatever. We need people like that to push us forward. And whether we read their agenda or in their mind, for a certain personality like us, if we have a little bit of a lack of confidence, we will attract someone who has exaggerated confidence or narcissism that will push us forward. And so he was just the guy you needed. And apparently, despite the fact that I cried myself to sleep that night, that was the guy I needed too. Because I ended up making promo packs for, I don't know, 36 radio stations and walked into the radio stations and handed them. With a suit on. Ended up getting a radio show, and I've been on for 10 years at Hay House. So is it that you want to call that guy back and go, you know, so what were you wrong? It's that guy really helped me. And maybe that guy helped you. But they do have an unwitting radar for someone's very subtle insecurity. And mine was, maybe I won't get it. and I needed to get through it. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Does that make sense?
Yes. Do you have any explanation of how we as humans pick that energy up from other people?
Yeah. I do. If you take your hand, you put your thumb and your second finger together. People in your audience will do the same. The thumb is the temporal lobe, the area for emotion and intuition, also spirituality. The top is the frontal lobe, the sensor, the thing that covers it up. So we can keep the job, the relationship, marriage, the money, and our place in society so we don't get arrested, follow the rules. Mind you, that second finger, the frontal lobe, is also completely covered with estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone receptors, which facilitates us to shut up. Key is that if you are born without a lot of frontal lobe, ADHD, brain injury, MS, whatever, you will be temporal lobe centric. You will be an intuitive on a stick. You will be a spiritual person on a stick. You'll be hyper-emotional. You won't be able to shut up. On the other hand, at midlife, when your frontal lobe starts to go away because of hormone changes, your emotions you'll spit them out. Your intuition and spirituality come flooding out. There are some people who have aberrant development in their frontal lobes. Some people have cerebral palsy. They have movement disorders. And some people have what I call a personality palsy. They have a personality disorder, a weakness. Some of them are sociopaths. Some of them are narcissists. No, sociopaths have trouble with that last one, following rules in society. And so they go after what they want, temporal lobe, and they don't consider other people's feelings. Narcissists have trouble balancing their feelings with someone else's, joint attention. Either way, they have aberrant or ineffective ways of going after what they want and injuring others. So they actually use what I call reverse intuition. They actually can read your mind like a predator. They know unwittingly what to say based on your past trauma to get you to give them what they need. For example, this will make your hair stand on end. I won't use the name of the author. There's a very, very famous author who does classes all over the United States, has done it since the 80s. And once a friend of mine and I was sitting at the lunch at one of those events, 1,000 people, and we saw a rare sight, which was about three men at a lunch table next to us. And we heard them talking, and you know what they were saying? They were saying that this was a feeding ground. They were saying that they loved to go to these conferences where middle-aged women were there because they said their husbands weren't spiritual enough. And these men knew exactly what to say to hook the women and get them into bed. These guys were very intuitive about which women were in bad marriages and could be picked up. That is sociopathy and reverse intuition. That's how they hook into your psyche. And even though it's, quote, their stuff, they are reading your mind. Does that make sense?
It does, and I've seen it happen all too often.
Oh! Yeah. I'm sitting there at the table, and my friend Northrop, who was sitting there going, I'm sorry, I could swear. I'm like, son of a bitch! I couldn't believe it. And now, in the year 2016, I have friends who I know who are in bad marriages, and what do? With their buddies, they go away for a weekend to this workshop or that workshop, and they complain about how their husband's not spiritual enough. And they sit in the front row, and they fawn over this guy, and maybe 2% of the people in the conference are men, and they're players. And they go, I wish my husband was like you. And I'm sitting there in the corner gagging. Do they want to hear what I have to say? No. There's no amount of me warning them because they don't want to listen to their intuition. their body would warn them, but they don't want to hear it because they like the feeling of what the guy's saying to them. They're giving them a seduction. And so their frontal lobe will center their intuition. It's disgusting. Does that make sense?
It does. Is there a good side to being intuitive?
Everybody has it. It's protective.
How do you use it in the work that you do?
Well, everybody has it. It's a part of the interface between the frontal lobe and the temporal lobe, so it helps you make decisions. So people call me from all over the world, and knowing only their name and their age over the phone, describe a specific emotional situation in their life that I see aggravates their health. And then, knowing only their name and their age over the phone, I describe their physical body. Head, eyes, ears, neck, thyroid, heart, breast, lungs, every organ system looking for the presence of health or disease. I connect the emotion and the physical, the intuitive and the physical. I give them solutions. That's how I help people. It's very separate from my physician life, and I have people sign consent forms that acknowledge that we're not having a physician-patient relationship. I'm not giving them a diagnosis, prescribing treatment. I'm teaching them how their own body is a source of their intuition, letting them know that something in their life or the life of a loved one is out of whack.
I want to have a slight redirect back to dealing with people, you know, picking up or being picked up by others. For those of us that are intuitive and they're aware of the intuition, when we go into a room filled with, you know, all sorts of whatever energies and vibes and weird thoughts wandering around, how do we monitor that or not control it? Because I don't think you control it. But how do we either protect or do we just stay out of those situations?
No.
You know, what do
we
do? You
can't stay out of it. Many people who have exaggerated temporal lobe states, who are hyper-intuitive, hyper-anxious, hypersensitive, end up having very reactive health problems because the temporal lobe is very connected to the body. In fact, I have yet to meet someone who is either in the intuitive field or who wasn't very porous or sensitive like that, who didn't tend to be moody, anxious, irritable, have social phobias, be porous or sensitive when it had to do with being crowds, closing spaces, public speaking. And when they're around angry people, they get anxious. It tends to make their adrenal gland produce cortisol, make them have problems with blood sugar or weight, or digestive problems, not to mention immune system problems. They were the person in their family who was the sensitive one. The, as you said, thin-skinned. The thing is that I know people who say they do the white bubble. They do the white cloud. They do the white everything. They do the cage. They do everything. Most people who get, like, overly porous, overly sensitive, they do avoidance. Well, they'll stay away from crowds. They'll stay away from, quote, toxic people. But that's like saying, you know, air goes all over. Intuition goes all over. You can pick something else happening in Guam if you're in New Hampshire. It's not like you can really block that out. And the effort that you create to block something out in itself makes your adrenal gland produce epinephrine. It exhausts your adrenal gland to, quote, block something out. A better skill would be to use something like dialectical behavioral therapy or DBT. It's been used for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, a person porous or sensitive or anxious or panicky. It's also used for people who have medication-resistant depression and anxiety, and that's also people who are resistant, from my perspective, of using medication. However, from my perspective, DBT is wonderful for what I would call intuitive personality styles, which means your body and your brain are overly reactive to people around you. So it's based on mindfulness. And it teaches you how to be aware of when you're intuitively keyed in, just like that phone went off, to when your alarm, your intuitive alarm goes off, that you can press a button and say, I'm putting you on hold. And then you can sit, observe, describe, allow, and figure out the correct response. If you don't, that temporal lobe of intuition will send it down to your adrenal gland. It will release cortisol and cause that infamous adrenal gland fatigue. And then it will send a domino effect of peptides to your immune system, which will make a mess in your body. You've got your chronic fatigue, your chronic Epstein-Barr virus, your metal poisoning, your all kinds of other things, not to mention hormonal irregularities that started the adrenal gland and started domino effects that affect the uterus, the ovaries, the prostate, not to mention the breast. So, not to mention the heart, the lungs, and then you got every organ involved. So, from my perspective, mindfulness helps you, but also affirmations helps you. But, of course, you also have to buffer the body with nutritional supplements, herbs, and medicines. So that's why the book Heal Your Mind helps you teach you how to use all of that. It's a whole prescription program to help balance your brain and mind, your intuitive brain, and also the last book that I did with Louise called All Is Well, Heal Your Body. And between the both of those books, you learn how to understand. It's like an owner's manual to teach you how to use your intuitive brain and mind to survive and thrive in the world.
And what I like about, as I've listened to you down through the years, and from, as we mentioned backstage that I interviewed when your first book came out, Awakening Intuition, is that you do have that, what I would call a whole food approach, meaning that you're talking about all aspects. You're talking about the emotions. You're talking about how it flows in the body, you know, hormonally, and this cascade of what can occur. And then you're saying also here are some supplements and possibly if you need medications for a period of time. I mean, it's a big picture approach, which I really like because it gives you a lot of choices and it gives you a lot of ways that you can do things. And when did you, how did you start working with Louise's affirmations? When did that piece sort of click into place, I guess I would call it?
Well, back in 1982, I was literally asleep 16, 17 hours a day. I was having seizures, narcolepsy. I'd walk around and fall asleep. And the first time, it was rather classic, I was standing up in the cafeteria, and I woke up and I was surrounded by glass. I had fallen asleep in line in the cafeteria with glasses and a plate. I fell, and it was all shattered all around me. It's like my life shattered. I can no longer live like that. And they eventually, my grade point average at that point, because you can't really learn when you're asleep, was 2.22. which is not conducive to going to medical school. So they gave me a lot of speed, which wouldn't keep me awake, which really scared me because I was on 112.75 milligrams of Xylert, which is like crystal methamphetamine, and it wasn't keeping me awake. And I'm like, wow, this is like it could keep an elephant awake, and it's not me. So they eventually did an EEG, and they showed I had an epilepsy. And they gave me a fabulous drug, which you would say not so fabulous, but it did, for me, be fabulous because it woke me up. And I don't know if you've ever seen the book Flowers for Algernon, but it's about this guy who they used to call mentally retarded but now call cognitively challenged. They did an experiment on him and they gave him a medicine and they made him, quote, smart. And, you know, you see in the book him getting smarter and then the medicine stops and he gets cognitively challenged again. Well, for me, I got smart again. And Tegretol opened my eyes and I could read and write. And I went from a 2.22 average to a 4.0. I was ecstatic. And I graduated. And my last semester I had a 4.0. I was smart again. I cannot tell you what that feels like. I could read. I could write. I could learn. Life was good. And then I went running on a bridge and I, quote, had a seizure or fell asleep, you know, crossing the bridge, and I got run over by a truck. the medicine stopped working, like flowers for Algernon. And then they found out that the medicine was wiping out my bone marrow. My red cells were going away. My white cells were going away, and my platelets were going away. And if I stayed on the medicine, I would need a bone transplant, bone marrow transplant. And that was it. No other anticonvulsant would work. And so I had to go back to the beginning, like flowers for Algernon, and I was going to be stupid again. And this was devastating. And so one night, I walked into this place called Trident Bookstore on Newbury Street. You know, in all desperation, we're all desperate. We go to those woo-woo bookstores, New Age bookstores back then. And I leaned against the bookstore, the bookshelf, because that's what I would do. I'd feel sleepy, and I'd lean against things to prevent myself allegedly from falling asleep, but I would just fall asleep standing up and then fall. So I'm leaning against this bookshelf, and this book falls out called You Can Heal Your Life. And it was a workbook. And I'm like, wow. So she says that you got these negative thought patterns. She says that if you turn them around, you get better. I mean, thus the title. So I figure out I had never had anything else to do with my time. So I took it, bought a Moleskine book or some kind of other notebook. I don't remember what it was. And I went home and got this wonderful pen because I was really into pens. And I wrote them over and over again. I love myself just the way I am. I love myself just the way I am. I love myself just the way I am. I did it like you do reps in a gym, like you're doing raising, you know, lifting weights. And over the course of 3 months, I slowly woke up. I have it documented. I have it in journal. And I went, wow, that's amazing how that works. Are you following me?
Yeah, yeah.
And so this went on for about 3 or 4 months. I was working in the lab at the time. And, you know, before that, I was falling off the chair in the lab, falling asleep. And, you know, they kind of got upset at me. It's kind of bad to do that in the lab with chemicals and stuff. But anyway, and I ended up getting into medical school. And years later, when I wrote my book, I actually gave a talk with Louise, with other people. And then years later, I was at a conference, and I heard that Cheryl Richardson had written a book with Louise. So I went up to her somewhat brazenly, and I said, if you ever want to have anybody show the science that supports your work, I do it. Because I have a funny feeling that there is science to support it. If you want to know that your work holds water, scientifically, I'll do it. She took my arm, brought me to Reed Tracy, the president, and said, I want it. And I did it. So if you look at All Is Well, you'll see that it's completely footnoted. It shows the science to support those citations, those affirmations, that they're based on, believe it or not, even though she barely has a high school degree, that if you look at all the cognitive behavioral therapists, like Beck, the father of cognitive behavioral therapy, that many of his, quote, schema, S-C-H-E-M-A-A, to how to turn around the thoughts behind depression, narcissism, anxiety, are very much similar to hers. In fact, I cracked the code behind her affirmations. And she said to me, what code? I said, it's very consistent. She said, I didn't really have a consistent way of doing it. I said, oh, but there be. It's annoying because I paid $275,000 for my education. And Louise barely graduated from high school. You got to love that. Sickening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually annoying.
Really, really annoying. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
That's how I met Louise. She's tough as nails. If you think she's all that way, oh, no. She's a New Yorker.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody thinks she. I've heard her speak, and everybody thinks that she's warm and fuzzy, and she there is that, but she is so not.
Can I tell you something? She's not. That's my phone agreeing with me. Not a chance. She is tough as nails. Not no way. I have never met anybody in the position who was in that like that wasn't ruthlessly intuitive. The other one was Oprah Winfrey. Everybody thinks that one's a sweet thing. Uh-uh. I was on her show. Tough as nails. Because they have to be. And they're ruthlessly intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
They always have to be. To get through what they do, they have to be able to be both thin-skinned and tough-skinned.
Yeah.
Thin skin and tough skin.
Yeah. And what was some of the, I know this is a bigger question, but what is, I think you're painting this picture for us, but what was some of the science that you, did you just have an intuitive thing that you knew the science behind?
No.
I mean, I know you have the education.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I'm going to tell you how I did it. So first of all, being somewhat of a moron, I make this grand pronouncement that I'm going to do this at a speaker's dinner, right? To the president of Hay House. But I had no idea how I was going to do it, like an idiot. So on the plane ride at home, I had a copy of You Can Heal Your Life. Because I know the science, the neuroanatomy of emotion, I know what changes in the body are underlying the five basic emotions, fear, anger, sadness, love, and joy. I know that fear makes muscles shake. Anger makes muscles clamp down. Joy makes muscles relax and open up, and so does love. And sadness makes muscles and your body wilt, droop. Knowing those things, I try to find a pattern behind her affirmations and her negative thought patterns, and it's consistent. Whenever she says anger, she says hold on, which is tighten down. She says anger around hypertension, and when you look at the literature, hypertension is related to hostility, which is another word for anger. And then when you look at her affirmation, she says, I release, which is relax the blood vessels, which is bring in joy and love. So it's consistent with what we know of the biology and the actions associated with each emotion. And I don't know how the hell she knew that. It's annoying to me. So if you look at each... Why are you laughing at me? It's not funny.
I know.
Affirmation. Beyond the ones about, there's ones about how each finger has an emotion. Those ones I've never figured out. But the basic ones that most people have problems with, you got your hypertension, you got your cholesterol, right? You got asthma. These things unwittingly not only relate to what we know in the literature about what psychological aspects make these problems worse, but they almost unwittingly are associated with the solutions. The opposite of the emotion. She's incredible. And the reason why I also know that is because a man who's a famous behavioral neurologist named, DiMaggio, he wrote a book called The Feeling of What Happens. He talks about the anatomy, what goes on in your body with each emotion. And it matches what Louise Hay does. So there is water, scientific water. There's a scientific premise behind her affirmations. It is. That's what's annoying to most people, because there is wisdom and elegance underneath the simplicity of that little book, which is why it stands the test of time.
And it still annoys me.
I couldn't possibly support something that wasn't scientifically sound, because I can't lie. My mouth and my voice starts to spasm. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But down to the years... You know, I discovered that your book as well many years ago, and I have a tattered copy here someplace. I was looking for it before the show, and I can't find it, and I'm going to, because it's one of those things that down through the years, I've spent a lot of time in different arenas of study, but, you know, like becoming a master herbalist and doing other kinds of body work and research and everything, and then you keep coming back to, like, you pick up this little simple book with little things you say to yourself, and you think, really? What? And here
annoying.
You are. It's annoying. I love it.
I know,
but it's annoying. Yeah,
but you know, I'm going to tell you something. There's a famous behavioral neurologist. His name is Norman Geschwin. Brilliant man. He's dead. He died right before my PhD program, which is very upsetting. He says, explain complex things with simplicity. And that is actually a balanced brain. Because complexity and detail is left brain. Simplicity is right. You know you're talking to someone who's not quite with the program, because they've got to make it sound really complicated. If they make it sound that complicated, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And that includes theology. Anybody who explains to you the tree of life and goes on and on and on and on, they don't have to. They can explain it. If they can, they have to be able to explain it to you at a level that anybody can understand. If they try to talk over you, it means they're trying to be a guru to you. Like Norman Geshwin says, take something complex and explain it to it in its most simplistic form. That is the brilliance of Louise Hay, that she takes the entire health, heal your body. I might add also, what's unique about that, without taking too much longer on this radio show, heal your body, that little book. She also includes the mind in it, which people don't realize. She didn't say heal your mind and body, because when that was first written, nobody did body-mind, mind-body. She just said heal your body. But interesting, within that frame, there's also depression. So she acknowledges that depression is a body problem, which is fascinating. This is lovely, because now we know that you can treat depression as if it was an immune problem, because depression is an immune problem. IL-1, IL-6, tumor necrosis factor alpha, it's an inflammatory problem. Nonetheless, beyond that, you also look at that book, and there are no learning disabilities on that, because Louise Hay does not consider learning disabilities a disease, and they shouldn't be. They're just a unique style of learning in a typical way of being, like left-handedness. And so what's fascinating about the simplicity of that book, it's heal your body. She doesn't separate the mind. Psychiatry shouldn't be separate from the body. It just shows that we're in our infancy. And second of all, she doesn't consider learning disabilities disabilities at all. We just haven't learned how to use that style of our mind yet.
That's
interesting.
Wonderful. That's really great. I hadn't thought of it that way. That's really wonderful.
Well, it's not in that book. So when I did Heal Your Mind, it wasn't in there.
Yeah. That's amazing. And in our last 4.5 minutes, how do we, you know, what is the path that for people? Do you think that currently the best thing for people or the most beneficial is read your newest book, The Heal Your Mind Prescription, Wholeness, Medicine, Affirmations, and Intuition, in terms of that, and then further, once they do that, then can they work with you directly? Do they come to workshops? What is our path to our own wellness?
Well, I can leave you with one thing. Page 9 of the Intuitive Advisor. I've yet to meet an intuitive who wasn't moody, irritable, anxious, hard to get along with, and they're unusual and unique. But if you meet a person who's very intuitive in the field of intuition, who's the real thing, they're usually not good at promotion. They're not good at selling. It's the last thing. You notice I'm not saying throughout this whole thing, oh, you need to go to my 7-day intuition training program. You really need to do that. Or you really need to do this book, this book, this book. The last thing I think about is selling anything. I think about content, content. No, I'm just telling you. I'm like, oh, yeah. The whole point of this is to sell the new book, Heal Your Mind. Almost forgot that. That's what my publisher wants you to do. They want you to buy the new book. I'm just going to say it that way. And they're going to get aggravated at me.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, you can read the book. I'll read the book. I read people's books. And it can help you work on yourself. But you know the way you are. I know the way I am. I lie to myself. I say things that I want to hear. I wouldn't be in the kettle of fish I am half the time if I listened to my own intuition. You can't do a reading on yourself because you lie to yourself. You don't want to hear it until it blows up in your face, and then you're like, oh, my God, I wish I'd known. So I'm not saying you have to call me to do a reading. Try the book first. Look at the information. Then show it to a good friend who probably has a weight problem, is probably irritable, anxious, mildly rude, and blunt. Do you think I have a problem there? And they go, uh-huh. Then chances are you're lying to yourself. If you need more information from someone who knows nothing about you other than your name and your age, I'm your gal. I'll be loving and kind, direct, but I have nothing more to do but to help you create greatness and health and wonder in your life, because you're capable of doing it. Did I jam a lot in there? I jammed a lot about my 7-day class, if you want to learn intuition.
That was wonderful.
I jammed about selling the new book, but I also said selling stuff makes me nervous because it's not what I lead. It makes me nervous because I think you think I'm here just to sell this and I'm not the real thing. When real things, don't focus on that. If you ever meet someone who's long on promotion, short on content, chances are they're not the real thing.
That's a bumper sticker. That's a long bumper sticker, but it'd be worth it to have
on
the car.
Well, it would have to go around the car to the front and around. It would be like a banner around the car.
But it would be so worth it. I so agree.
Thank you so much for interviewing me.
It was great. Where do people find, you know, where do people find you? Let's have, get that information in there as well. Where do people find you?
www.drmonalisa.com. www.drmonalisa.com or call 207-846-6475. 207-846-6475. I have an answering service. They'll take your name. If the cat answers, hang up.
For people who don't know, Dr. Mona Lisa has a regular radio show on Hay House, and oftentimes when she's talking to somebody, the cat will come in with commentary.
Oh, that, not only do they come in commentary, they come in with rats if the person's
right.
in a bad relationship, snakes if they're in a relationship that's got undercover, and often moles if there's something they don't want to see, especially blind moles. So, and then, of course, there's the regular cat fight. But
right.
they come in.
They're brazen. They like being on radio. Oh,
yes,
that was really
do.
That was really great.
Thank you so much. You have a great day. All my best to Shuri. Okay?
All right. Thank you
very
much.
Thank you so much. You take it
okay.
easy. Goodbye now.
Bye.